If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, hit up Graphic Source. They offer industry-leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management software. And when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, they have over 40 years in the game. They really know and understand shop needs. They have a proven track record of success. They run our art department. They handle all of our SEPs. They live in our Printavo. Hit up Graphic Source. You can get 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order. They will absolutely be at Long Beach. Easy Way is launching a new giveaway to give back to their amazing customers. Each month, they're giving away a $250 prize, and it's super easy to enter. You can go to easyway.com/giveaway. Make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with Easy Way systems and chemicals. Enter their giveaway. Go check them out at Long Beach. We use Easy Way products every single day. If you don't know, you know now. Have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy? If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. If you mention the Printavo podcast, you'll receive an extra 10% off your order. Dave gives away a free case of PMI tape for every episode. All you have to do is go to his Instagram, Multicraft underscore daddy, follow, like, look at all of his corny videos, and shoot him a note, and he'll enter you in for a drawing. This is for new customers only, but give Dave a follow. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, you should definitely check out Stahls. Stahls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that's scaling up, Stahls makes the hustle easy. They're here so you can simply heat press and profit. I've been developing a new patch line for headwear, and I've been using Stahls. I've been specifically using some of their new PVC, like the silicone patches that have been incredible. Whether you're, looking to do DTF, patches, order twill, you name it, hit up Stahls. You can save 20% on your next DTF transfer order using the code HUSTLER20. They will absolutely be at Long Beach. We appreciate you, Stahls. All right, let's hop on into the episode.
Matt McLennan, Madison, Alabama. We appreciate you being able to join us today. You've been a part of Fabric for a while, and you always contribute some pretty cool things too. So that's why Steven and I were like, hey, why don't we get Matt from Apparel Lab on the show? And let's talk about a couple of things as we get started for 2026 coming on up.
One of the things that caught my eye, Matt, was that you've been a DTG shop since day one. And I think that's pretty interesting, especially with the transition to DTF on demand. So I think when we find a shop that's, I would call it like non-traditional, like it's not about your automatics and stuff, you must be doing something slightly different. But I mean, quickly tell us, like, give us the landscape of the shop in like 60 seconds. Like, yeah, give us your, you can flex for a minute.
Yeah. I mean, why I went that route initially, because, I had nutrition stores. I want to be able to print my own shirts. As with every customer, I needed it yesterday, right? I came up with an idea. I needed it in 2-3 days. No one could make it happen. And so once I found out about DTG back in 2012, I came pretty close to buying a printer myself and jumping into the t-shirt game just for myself at the time. Thankfully, that didn't work out because DTG technology back then was rough. They hadn't figured out a lot of things like air permeating the lines, white ink circulations, yada, yada. So fast forward 2016, I kind of got the bug again. Found a refurbished printer that was like just coming out of AnaJet being refurbished. It was going to ship on a pallet directly back from that refurbishment to me, and I could just have it in my back room, buy it cash, no payment, no extra overhead. I was like, if I need shirts, I print them. If I don't, I don't. No stress. At least that's what I thought. And so, I pulled the trigger on that in kind of the fall of 2016, brought it in. And, before I even had the printer in-house, I had some business friends, one of which owns a really huge online boutique. And she's like, Matt, I want you to print shirts. Can you do this for me? I hear you're going to be able to print shirts. I'm like, yeah. Give me like a month to get my basis under me. And she's, a week later she calls me. She's like, hey, let's do this now. I'm like, all right, well, I'm semi-familiar with what we're doing here, but yeah, let's press go. Let's do this thing. So that's kind of where we started, just in the back room of my nutrition store, maybe 400 square feet. Me, a single heat press, that refurbished printer, and a little pre-treat machine kind of made out of PVC pipe. So it was really humble beginnings.
A nutrition store.
Are you a CrossFitter turned printer?
Oh, yes, I am. Yeah.
So, oh, you're right.
CrossFitter. So we either have musician turn printer, CrossFitter turn printer. I don't think
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, that's the natural path of life, right?
Yeah. Either music, CrossFit, or yeah. When did you realize that you couldn't DTG on polyester?
Oh, I mean, that was pretty quick, right? Yeah, lots of requests for that in the athletic realm immediately. So tried that and failed and was like, okay, this is just something we can't do. That's cool.
And then give us your today kind of setup. So where you started and then like what's the layout? What's it like today?
So we've graduated over the last several years. Really 2020 was when we started to blossom. We realized we had to get out of this 400 square foot space. At the time we had like 5 printers, a conveyor dryer, and several heat presses in this tiny space that was literally becoming a sweatshop because the humidity had to be so high. There was so much heat output from the dryer and presses in this little space. And so we moved to a 3,000 square foot space right before COVID hit, literally like finished building it out the month before everything shut down, survived that year. And then fast forward a couple more years and we moved in that same building area to about 4,500 square feet where we are now. So going from the days of like the Anajet refurbished printer and me and a heat press to now we've got the commercial Brother GTX 600s, run a conveyor dryer set up back there. We run 3 lasers. We have 7 heads of embroidery. We do wide format stickers and things like that too. So we've got a nice little built out area now of various departments. So we're able to control a lot of things in-house, everything other than DTF, which I have no desire to bring in-house at this time. But we like to be able to control things. So being able to do it ourselves usually starts with something that we feel is cool. DTG was that thing that was cool, right? We could do things that most screen printers were not capable of at the time, or most did not try to do multicolor designs, right? Everybody was shooting for the single and 2-color, maybe 3-color designs. We could do 100, and so it just kind of set us apart. And even starting in that 2016, 2017 timeframe, we always focused on really comfortable shirts. I think you guys are shirt snobs like myself, but that's kind of why I found my niche was we started with like Next Level Bella Canvas. We never had Gildan as our proposition to customers. And so, we were kind of known for the soft shirts initially, the soft shirts and then of course the soft prints. And so that meshed really well and helped us to gain a lot of ground here locally.
You said things kind of really took a turn in 2020. What was that trigger? Was it riding the e-com wave at that time or what bent the curve for you guys?
No, we're non-traditional in a lot of ways. So while we are direct to garment, the e-com has never really been our main focus, not print on demand heavily. We're very locally centered. We work with, I would say 90% local businesses and, small to large businesses, not just your small mom and pop, handy repairman, but your large government contractors and things like that, where we work with tons of them. So the 2020 wasn't necessarily the turning point. I think that year set the stage for us having the facility that we could accommodate more team members in, starting to bring in more people to handle aspects of the business. And then 2021 is when things really started to grow for us. Nicole, who is our general manager now, she came on board after leaving a tech startup. They laid everybody off, gave her some severance. And that December of 2020, she was a friend of mine, came to me and said, "Hey, I've got severance. I don't have a job. Can you help me redo my resume? And I can help you at the shop for a little while because I got to keep my hands busy. I can't just stand around." And so she came on board and started helping out with our team. And then early that spring, or I guess even before spring, the end of winter in 2021, she came to me and said, "Hey, I've got a proposition for you. Like, you pay me this and you get me full time." Now, you guys may have met Nicole at a couple of trade shows and things, but she's very smart. She's got her MBA. She has a really good head on her for business and management and people. And so I knew that this was a winning candidate that I wanted on my team and somebody that could really help me take things forward. I just didn't know if I could afford her at the time.
So her role was like taking on all operations type stuff while you handled sales, or what was the split?
Thinking back that far, it's hard to figure it out. I think I was still very heavily involved with sales in some aspects, trying to pass things off. At the time, yeah, she would be handling most of sales. And I don't even know if we had a logistics person.
Do you remember what revenue range you roughly in at that time?
Yeah, I think we were just under 300,000 at the time.
And she was like, I'm ready to, I can come on, I can help. Here's the salary requirements and so on. I mean, that's pretty early to have someone of that caliber on board, right? I mean, it's great. It's probably the right move, but like, that's a scary move.
No, it was a scary move. You know, and so it was one of those things where I crunched the numbers and was like, we can try this for like 4 to 6 weeks before I'm going to crash out. And so I'm going to hedge my bets here and say, this is a good move. And the return on this investment is going to be more than worth it. And it was.
Wait, so you had 6 weeks you felt before things could go sideways financially. And it was like, okay, we're going to have to part ways.
Yeah, it was like, I'll try this. And I think that we can get traction. You know, Bruce will love this, but we had tried to get Printavo integrated into our shop for probably that whole year leading up to that. We'd like sign up for Printavo, pay for a couple months. Then I'd email Jessica and be like, hey, cancel this. We can't use it. And then we'd sign up again. And I'd email Jessica and be like, hey, cancel this, refund the payment. Like, we can't do it. And so as soon as I said yes to her, I said, hey, you have one job this first month you're here. Get us using Printavo. All of our pricing, all of our invoicing, everything, get us using Printavo in the shop. And that year was the year that we stopped using FreshBooks and doing manual mockups in Photoshop and all of the crazy things that you do before you have something that can manage that for you. And so we scaled almost 3x that year.
So why did you scale? So, okay, so Better Systems, it sounds like she's taking a lot off your plate. But like, what do you mean by scale? Because scale I think of as more revenue too. So that's part of the equation, but where does the revenue part come in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really being able to handle sales in a more professional manner, get quotes turned around more quickly, have a true idea of a pricing standard, right? So if someone comes to us, we're not trying to figure out what we're going to charge them every single time. I had standards, but they lived in my brain. And I had like passed these off to our production manager at the time of like, hey, here's kind of what we charge for 24, 48 front, back. You know, if a sleeve came into play, it's like, let's talk about this for a second. How hard is it? You know, where we took all of that data, put it into a pricing matrix sheet, and then said, does this make sense? And then we kind of built off of that and slowly had to tweak numbers until we felt like it supported the business. It was something we could feel good about, you know, day in and day out. We were relatively competitive, but we didn't want to be the cheapest shop because we knew if we want good people and we want to have good products, we've got to be able to charge something that feels like we're worth it. And so, you know, I came from being in the nutrition store industry for, you know, how long before this? Seven years before this, I guess. And so I started as the cheap shop, the discount shop, right? And then over time had to carve out to where we could actually make money. And so I told myself as I started this business, I'll never be the cheapest guy in town ever again, because it's so hard to keep business going and not just be scraping to like make it, you know? I'm like, we have to be sustainable. And so once we started to figure out our bases, you know, around that revenue point, so we could say, okay, this is an operation. We now have rent that we're responsible for. You know, this is no longer in the back of my nutrition store. If I can pay the nutrition store rent this month, it's cool. If I can't, no big deal. You know, we had real responsibilities. We had people dependent on us. And so at that time too, we had pulled on a full-time print and graphic designer. And so we have like two salaried employees. You know, I'm the guy who doesn't really have to get a paycheck because I have a paycheck from this other thing, you know? And so that was where we had to start taking things serious and craft it out, right?
You know what's really interesting? I think like hiring Nicole, you found someone that holds themselves to a high enough standard, like a higher standard than your own, right? And I think when you find those employees and you lean into them, that's like the gamble. But that was like an inflection point. Have you guys read Atomic Habits? Have you guys, James Clear's Atomic Habits, Bruce? Add this to your 2028 reading list. But he talks about the difference between goals and systems. And he basically says like goals provide direction, but systems create progress. And I think like as shop owners, we have lofty goals. We're working on 14 different things at once, but we don't work systematically. We don't create processes and habits, but that's actually what leads to long-term success. So his whole thing is like, forget your goals. Your goals are going to like basically drop down to whatever your systems are. And it sounds like when you're like, hey Nicole, the only thing you're going to do for the next 6 weeks is make sure Printavo's running. And she had like one singular focus that could have been like the best decision you've ever made for your company.
I think we were using it in less than 2 weeks. And, you know, it was one of those things where I'm like, are you sure? You know, and I vetted it, ran a couple things. So it was like, okay, this makes life easier, right? And we can go drop this other subscription over here that isn't serving us anymore. So
do you ever feel like, you know, as business owners, because we have 20 different directions and 15 different things, we can't ever get really good at one thing and just do it really well? Like, for instance, like, hey, we want to do ads this year, but instead of just doing ads, like, we're just going to focus on Meta or something like that. Like, do you feel like distraction and all the different like scope creeps, like, does that affect you?
For sure. I am one of those guys who will pile things onto my plate until I can't manage it anymore. As I think many of us do, right? We see a lot of opportunities that are exciting. We quickly try to jump on as many things as possible. And then we always almost have a backpedaling moment where we have to go back and reprioritize, right? I pulled 15 things onto my plate. Whoa. These three or four are actually important. Let's go after these. But I think the maturity of a business owner is kind of a unique thing. As you mature, you start to realize that, number one, you can't do it all by yourself. You need team members to pass it off to. But that feels scary. You lose control. And so you don't know how to do that. But, you know, the power of one is really big. I think focusing on one singular thing that you can do and accomplish and move forward on is so much greater than doing five things mediocre. And I think we all tend to discount that in our own minds because it seems like not enough, especially if you're a high achiever, right? You see, well, I need to do all of these things. And that may be true, but you don't have to do all of those things in this moment. If you can do this one in that moment, that is such a much greater leap for you and an increase in your progress than doing the five little things.
I agree, Matt. I even think bigger than that. I think like longer term in, you know, I don't know, 3 years or whatever, it sounds miserable to be split time on five things all the time, still every single day. Like, I think we hope it's sort of a bridge. And then next thing you know, we're doing the same thing for a long time. But I don't think anybody wants to be in that space in the future. But I was curious with your team and like your structure and stuff too. So Nicole started pretty early on and was a huge, huge help and like almost a shifter. Implementing the processes and stuff in the business created a lot more growth because you guys could just handle a ton more, which is really cool. Were there any other roles that you felt you brought on early that had an outsized effect like that too?
Yes. And, you know, I think she was a big proponent of this too. Like, what is you guys' process for this? And it's like, well, we do it this way. And she's like, but what's the format? She's looking for like SOPs and documentation. And we didn't really have a lot of it. I have like documentation around specific temperatures and times and pre-treat things that, you know, are written on paper on the wall. And I felt good about that. But the processes for how things were managed in a queue was not really there. So she started to form like a production pipeline queue during that time as well to help us, you know, follow timelines, keep things in order and follow a better process. And I think pushing us to have better processes was big. And it's interesting now in hindsight for me because I'm traditionally a pretty disorganized person, big procrastinator, very disorganized. If you ask anybody that knew me in high school, they'd be like, man, that guy's going to be late. He's not going to have his things together. And, you know, it's not going to be good. Now I am quite the opposite, complete 180. I'm very meticulous about detail. I like things to be documented, communication to be clear. And I think that understanding my own habits and shortcomings over time and having to fight with them was important, and having someone else pushing for better, you know, and needing better from me was helpful to see that the business needed better too. And
what made you 180 like that? Was there like a moment where it's like, look, Matt, like I just can't work this way if you have it all in your head? Like you gotta.
I think it was just kind of a slow coming of age in a way, but you start to see your own downfalls. You know, we shoot from the hip as business owners very often, right? Whether it's a financial decision or a product decision, a hiring decision, you know, and I think that those times when you do that and you fall flat on your face or it doesn't pan out the way you hope, you take those little, I call them micro failures. And so you go through a lot of those micro failures. And if you're not, you know, kind of self diagnosing and understanding what's happening and learning from these micro failures, it's really hard to get better and move forward. And a lot of people let those things take them out. They either get down on themselves or put themselves in a position they cannot climb back out of.
Do you remember a micro failure that threw you off?
Oh, I took on a lot of financial responsibility in that same 2020 year. We added rent. I took out a loan for some more equipment as we got into the larger space. Then I felt a little overly confident before COVID hit and took out like another loan for like a wide format printer that, you know, it was like a Stripe Capital loan too. So the payback was based on a percentage. It felt like, oh, this is manageable. But then as the revenue changed a little bit, now that payback was really aggressive. And so what I thought was a year, 18 month payback, I paid back in 7 months, which just hammered our cash flow. So there are a lot of times where I looked at myself like, this was a really dumb decision. You can do stickers and banners that brings in a small percentage of revenue and you're hemorrhaging money making this payment for this device that is not bringing its value here. You know, and I think I put us in some really tight positions there and just had to strap up and be very careful. And so I think that the more I made stupid decisions like that, that were good learning lessons, but really hard to continue, the more I had to realize you've got to make better decisions with better information at hand and, you know, looking to the future of your team, because at the end of the day, several people here depend on this paycheck for their families.
That financial example, by the way, thanks for sharing that too. Like, I think that's actually more common than we think with a lot of shop owners. Going back, now that you've gone through that experience and are like way beyond it, like what would you have done then? Like in that moment where you're like, we want to grow, we want to be able to handle a couple different services. Would it just be passing it off and like, hey, I'm just not doing this, or I'm going to work with someone else to do this, or not getting distracted by some other services and just turning it down altogether? What do you think?
I think the main thing was I wanted control. And so I wanted to have it in house rather than I want to be able to provide this product also for my customers. If I were to do it now, I would definitely contract that out in another way or find something that was more revenue producing that was kind of on that cutting edge. I think that at the time, I had also brought in a laser cutter around that time. Personal purchase, didn't plan to be part of the business at the time. I was like, I want this. I'm buying this for Matt. This is my toy. 2 months later, we're producing tumblers and leatherette patches. And I'm like, no longer Matt's toy. This is not fun anymore. You know, but I was like, well, I brought in this and this became a revenue stream. I can do this and this is a revenue stream. Like it was almost that pseudo Midas touch mindset, right? If I do this, it's going to come. And I think going back in hindsight now, I would really try to look at what is the opportunity here? What is the opportunity in banners and stickers? Is this really revenue producing like I hope it's going to be, that's going to fit our business model? Is this a big need for our customers? I would do a little bit more research than just jumping headfirst into it like I tend to do.
And Matt, do you outsource stuff now?
Very little. Promo items is pretty much it. We did outsource embroidery until last year. We originally acquired another shop, brought him in to do embroidery, parted ways with him, and then brought embroidery in-house so that we could manage it and control it. You know, that was the game changer that I think I thought a lot of those other things would be.
But you learned, you know, because you finally decided to bring embroidery in-house because, you know, you outsourced it for a long enough time. It financially made sense. The laser was like, I could fuck with a laser, you know, or like, hey, a banner machine. You know, like we did the same thing. We brought in a Roland banner printer and we're like, we're going to do these, you know, my business partner has a bunch of different businesses. We can print banners for this, stickers for that, whatever. And who was running the banner machine? Like I was running it. And, you know, you're selling, I was like, man, our AOV on banners and stickers is like $400, $300. Like, what am I doing? And then afterwards I was like, oh, I have signed 365 and all these sticker companies now. And it's like, we don't even use it. But now we just think, you know, like, do we want to sub this out? Do we want to sub this out? Do we want to sub this out? And then we make the decision, okay, let's bring it in house. That's a very mature, I feel like that's a mature thing that we as shop owners do. Like, why haven't you brought screen printing equipment in?
So it really comes down to, I have introduced myself into the market in a totally different way. You know, I'm almost a little spoiled in DTG in that I don't have to go through all of the setup process that screen printers do, you know, the different inks, the films, the screens, all of that process. We don't have any experience with that and kind of the mess that's associated with that in my mind. And so, you know, we kind of take the road less traveled in a way that is not necessarily the most profitable one per unit as screen printing would be for some of our stuff. But It's something that we've invested in now and continue to see the industry improving in with, you know, operations like The Rock now. You know, that blends a unique cost per impression and supply that's pretty close to screen. And so it's almost one of those things where I've committed now long-term, this is the route that I'm going to continue to go down. And we're going to continue to move into a place where inks are cheaper, you know, it's less labor to produce. And, you know, we're very familiar with the marketplace.
It's interesting. I've gotten to know some of the leadership at Printful very well. And they run big Cornets nonstop. I mean, they have, I don't know, 7 facilities around the world, something crazy. And I would always ask their CEO, like, what happens when you get a 500 piece order? He's like, we DTG them. Like, we just know what we're good at. And it's like, have you thought about bringing screen printing? He's like, yeah, I've been approached by it a million times, but we just keep saying no. Like, we'll just get really good at this, even if it's a little bit slower, because we don't want to creep from what we know. So I think that like a lot of bigger companies actually say no. And that's not uncommon, but I think that's actually, there's like maturity and responsibility there. I feel like
there was I went through Alt-MBA, Seth Godin's Alt-MBA program several years ago. I think it was 2018. And in that time I had contracted out a huge job for a company like, you know, Polaris. It's like, you know, thousands of shirts. It's way larger than any of my normal orders. Contracted out. I showed up at this other shop who's printing it for me. I'm literally catching shirts off the printer as we're going through this. And I can see the real-time speed of how fast we're producing this thing. I was like, man, this is nuts. And I see that there's some tech integrated with this press. He's got a tablet here. It kind of tells him what's going on or what's wrong. He'll tells him his output. He can remote into it. That's all I know. I know no other details about this, but he's told me enough that I'm interested. So, you know, going to some trade shows thereafter, I did investigate it a little bit and I thought, this is the next step for us. We're going to bring in screen printing so that we can take these big orders. And as I went through Alt-MBA, we went through one of the exercises where we were to kind of set the roadmap for our business. And as I'm discussing this with my cohort and explaining that getting this larger piece of equipment is going to allow us a lot more opportunity to compete with the big dogs on price, one of the other people in my group comes to me and says, but is that what you really want? When you look at the future of your business, do you really want to be the low price guy who's competing with everyone else to do the big volume jobs? Do you want to be the Walmart, or do you want to be the other guy that has the better creative capability and is doing more of what you're doing now with the customers that do pay you for what you're doing? And it really kind of sat me back in my seat because I didn't expect that. And so I then had to go sit down for this, you know, a couple hours to work on this exercise and really think through, what do I want the future of my company to be? And I was very, I mean, if you had asked me, I would have said 95%, we're going to bring in a screen print press and we're going to start doing, you know, much cheaper single and double color prints. And immediately I decided that was not where I wanted to go with it. And so I axed that in my brain, shoved it off the table and was like, that's not the roadmap for Apparel Lab. And so, you know, I've just kind of tried to stay true to focus since then.
Wow. I like that. I like the stopping and thinking. It's something that, well, Steve and I put together this on Fabric, these like really kind of stop and think and write down with a partner or just outside the shop to get 2026, you know, like reflect on 25 and what do I want from the business and myself in 26? But I really like the thought that you had about what I want from the business roadmap wise. Maybe that's longer term, 3, 5, 10 years. Do you, like, what else was in that? Do you remember in that roadmap for you specifically too? Cause I don't, that's one thing is I don't think we think about, we kind of get dragged along by the thing, but like, we don't say like what we want to spend more time doing or less time doing.
Well, I think sometimes we don't get the time to just think and be creative and think through that stuff.
I wish I just had a little bit more time to stare at the wall.
I love having Wi-Fi in airplanes, but I think one of my favorite things is when the Wi-Fi doesn't work, because then I'm forced to think. And the amount of times where I've had really great ideas or just time to just think through and just ponder ideas and, you know, and kind of be left to my own imagination and self on an airplane. It's so helpful because it forces you to slow down for a moment and just be with yourself. And I think that, yeah, we, as shop owners, we don't get to do that because things are coming at you from every direction. I both like hate and love the holidays, right? As a nutrition store, we always do big Black Fridays, have for years. It's the most stressful time of the year for me, especially like family gatherings. And, you know, we've got Black Friday the next day and I've got a million things going on, trying to make sure all these marketing avenues are coordinating for that one day. But at the same time, it like, it forces you to just stop for one day. There's not a lot you can do. Christmas, same thing. Like you're like, man, everything slows down. Sales come to a halt, but it forces you to stop. And so I think over the years as I've matured, I look forward to that time. Nobody's calling me. No one's asking me questions. No one didn't show up to work on time. There's no problems. There's no fires. And, you know, you can just sit and think. And, I think along that same line of thinking, Bruce, over here to my left, there's a whiteboard off screen that I sat down probably 10 years ago and drew out for my nutrition store a mind map. Absolute Nutrition at the center in a spider web of things going to various circles all over this board. All the ideas I could ever think I wanted to do, from bringing like athletic shoes and apparel in-house and what that would look like, to healthy meals, all of these different things that were just outside of supplements and smoothies that we did at the time. And it was a unique exercise that I had all these ideas, and I had a really big vision for Absolute Nutrition that a lot of that didn't pan out. But I love going back to look at it and just being like, see the possibilities. And I think that more of us should do that in our shops, is take time to just put the possibilities out there, whether they're far-fetched or reasonable, and just consider them and go through pros and cons list and sit with your teams and go, what do you think would work here? Or ask your customers, what else are you looking for? Would this be a fit for you? I think there's a lot of opportunity and growth for that. You know,
have you had time to think about that for 2026 yet?
No, but it's on my list. You know, your shop checklist is going to be one of those things that slows me down significantly. You know, Michael even just saying, give me 3 non-numeric goals for the next 90 days is so helpful to force me out of the number seat. I want to dig into the numbers. I want to think about revenue, profitability, you know, all of those things. But when I have to think about something non-numerical, that forces me to think about action. And what is that action going to lead to? How is that going to benefit my people, my customers, my business, myself? I think that, you know, really getting to just spend time in I wouldn't say the stuff that's not pretty, right? The numbers are pretty to me. You know, everybody feels good about numbers. You understand how they work. You see growth and opportunity in them. They're fun. When you have to dig into how do I make my team feel like things are moving smoother, that doesn't feel pretty. That feels like hard work and something that is difficult, because you already feel like you probably have pretty good systems. How do I make them even better? But you know they can be better. But to sit with those things and think about it, you know, I think that's important.
Steven, is there anything that comes to mind when you think about your role for next year, of like what you want to spend more time on?
Yeah. So maybe a little story. Kevin, Bruce, and I, when did we start our goal meeting, our monthly goal meeting, Bruce? 2 years ago? So 2 years ago, Bruce, Kevin, and I were like, okay, we all have different goals in life, business, and we basically put them into 4 categories: family, fun, fitness, finance. And we set a meeting, a recurring meeting, once a month. And we each had like 4 or 5 goals under each one. And we shared them with each other. And then every month we'd meet and we'd basically just give it like is this green, orange, or red? Like, am I ahead? Am I behind on it? And as we talked through it, we would hold each other to like, okay, you know, how many days a week do you want to play tennis? Or like, how often do you want to be in the water surfing? Or like, how many vacations do you want to plan with your loved ones? And we started designing our goals to our life, and then the business was a part of it, versus the business being this anchor and then everything else revolving around it. And I really think it's probably, 2 years ago when we started this, that's when we actually, you know, whether it was mental health, whether it was I want to learn a new hobby, whether it was I needed to spend less time in production, the goals of the business just became one part of Steven, Bruce, and Kevin's like whole goal, you know, life goals, I think. I don't know, Bruce, if you want to reflect on any of that part, but I feel like that was probably a huge inflection point for me to become hyper and self-aware of everything else, not just my business. And then my business didn't define me at that point.
Do you think that there are new things now, Matt, you want to measure in 2026? Like, you talk about the quantitative versus non-quantitative, and they don't have to be numbers-wise, but like, did that exercise make you think about, you know, oh, the happiness level or something like that, or like ease of work life level? Or
I think a lot of that comes to what my team is feeling. You know, traditionally I've had employees stay with me both in this business and previous for a very long time, 3 to 5 years on average. And so, you know, doing something right to keep people that long, and then watching over time as some of that changes, where maybe there's a little bit faster turnover, or, you know, people are hopping to different things. You know, you have to think, am I building somewhere that they can grow and feel at home? Not everybody wants to just grow. You've got different types of people. You know, the younger person is looking to grow and learn and build and then continue on in their career. And so now, as a more mature business owner, I love when they leave after 3 to 5 years, taking that next step to grow themselves, because they've built a base here. They've learned something different that helped carry them into the next role. And I want to see them succeed in that from what they've learned here. For other people, you know, we have a lot of moms in our shop, and I'm not saying that they don't want to grow too. They definitely do. But I think seeing them develop, but also be comfortable in the flexibility that they're taken care of, that they don't have to stress their job. They take it personally from a stance of care for the customer and getting things done right, but they're not going home and stressing out to their families about it. And so I think, you know, trying to build the profitability of the business has nothing to do with my own bank account. It has to do with being able to pay them more and be able to provide for them more PTO, better bonus, you know, opportunities, more comfort at work. You know, we always joke with the girls that they're spoiled from, like, they love having dark chocolates around the office. You know, simple things like dark chocolates and coffee, like having those ready for them around the office when they want it is a big deal to them. And so several years ago, we're like, Matt, we really want to have these dark chocolates here. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And, you know, in times when we're like, Matt, we're running low on chocolate. You know, I'm like, look, if it's this small thing that makes them happy, then I'm happy to do it. I'll pull it out of my own pocket, you know. But all of that to say that I continue to go back to what makes things easy for my team, what makes them feel valued that they're here, and how can I make sure they want to stay here more long term, not forced to. And so that's where more of my attention goes to these days, is trying to sit through and think about how I can continue to improve that side of things. You know, I had a conversation with Dan Frank at Chicago Print Hustlers about that very thing. You know, just what are the things that you're doing for your employees? What does the bonuses look like? How are you managing these things? And he was kind enough to send me over some KPIs that they use to manage in order to award more of those things. And so that's a conversation that I feel like I need to continue to have and get better at. So that's one of my focuses for 2026 for sure. Has nothing to do with our sales number or anything else.
Can you be selfish for a second? Like, how about Matt? Like, how do you find balance in your 2026, right? Like, what, you know, whether it's work life, whether it's what you actually want to be working on? Because I think a lot of shop owners are looking at this year and saying, like, man, this year maybe punched me in the mouth or something like that. What are you thinking about for yourself personally for this next year? And, like, what do you imagine it to be or want it to be like?
I think I really want to focus more on my role as the CEO. And in a small business, it's almost silly to call yourself the CEO in a way, but I think the mentality matters. You know, you can be the founder of an organization or the business owner, and you wear a lot of hats, or you can even be very focused on operations. But being the CEO makes you step back and look at the business differently. Am I making profit outside of my own paycheck? Does that matter? I don't have investors. I don't have to have somebody that I have to generate a return for. But what do I want? Some more freedom in the budget? I do. Do I want to make sure that I have the ability to increase my paycheck next year? Yes. I think the time freedom for me is the biggest one, though. If I am operating smooth and I am giving the business what it requires of me, it shouldn't require me to be in front of a computer stressing 40 hours a week. I'm not above working 100-hour weeks, and I've done it a lot of times in the last 17 years as an entrepreneur. You can only manage it for so long in these sprints. You know, you get above 80 and it starts to dwindle down quickly. Fitness starts to go, health starts to go, habits start to go, your temperament and everything start to fall to the wayside. But, you know, I think the Tim Ferriss, like, 4-hour work week is an interesting mindset. And for someone who is maybe not familiar with it, it sounds impossible. There's no way I could get everything done in 4 hours. But when you have a really effective hour, we've got some pretty sharp people on this call right here. When you have a really effective hour, I think you could easily equate that to 4 to 10 hours that someone else is working, right? You're in deep flow, you're getting things done, and you just feel like a machine. Maybe especially with adding AI to that mix. Now you're superhuman, right? And so I think that trying to figure out how I can work effectively 10 to 20 hours a week on being intentional in what my work output is looking like, that's where I want to be, so that I have the freedom to do everything else. If I want to travel, if I want to go do something else with family, whatever it may be.
It's funny. I was just talking to someone. Monday mornings, you know, don't mess with my Mondays, but I try to get up at 5 a.m. and I try to get all my work, like my work that I need to get done for the week before like 9 a.m. So that, like, you know, things are going to just fall off the rails, or that I can just be very intentional about being in meetings. And because a lot of times there's things that I can't actually fix and touch, but a lot of people just need my attention. And so, you know, what I try to do is knock everything out, and I'll just like make my list and see if I can just hammer on it, so that, you know, the rest of the week just like opens it up and allows it to breathe. And so I think, you know, in business and going from a founder to a CEO is a lot of like, how do you create discipline and like not dabbling from that discipline? Rob Dyrdek says, don't dabble with discipline. And I think about it as like, when I'm disciplined in my fitness, I'm disciplined in my work. When I'm disciplined in my sleep, I'm disciplined in my meetings. Like, it all relates to each other. And I think having that mentality, I think wellness and health and wellness, when I am working out the most, I am the best business owner, you know, leader. But I think a lot of it like stems from personal. You know, if you're not getting sleep, if you're not working out, if you're not eating right, you know, then it like overflows in your business. I'm curious, like Bruce and Matt, how is that for you guys?
Back in Printavo land of, you know, 80 hour plus weeks of just trying to do everything, it just doesn't work. I mean, that's what kind of burned me out. To your point, the fitness, the food, like everything. I was on the mentality of like, my minutes are best spent working on the product or whatever in the business stuff, which meant like everything else got outsourced. And I went too far, probably in the Tim Ferriss world of dog walking. Someone comes and picks up the dogs. Food, someone's dropping off the food or just ordering. Gym, not that important. Like, we'll just like, adding this extra hour here is more important than that. And so I would just be in my room and I was like, I literally haven't moved for, you know, 10 hours. Like, this is insane. This is driving me literally insane. So, dude, we love talking about the Parkinson's law thing, but I think it just holds so true for this stuff. Like, if you only spent 4 hours a day, and it had to be the most effective 4 hours a day, at not as a shop owner, but as a CEO, I like the way you're talking about with that, Matt. What is the most value add thing? And we do that. Like, when we have to pick up go to the airport at 2 o'clock, you do that. It's just like, you're forced to do it versus like, can we force ourselves to do it?
Your most efficient days are right before you go on vacation.
Airport days. Dude, wow. There's a lot of airport similarities. There's the being in the airplane with shitty internet or no internet. Focuses work because you can only load one tab at a time, basically. And the days where you're crunched in time because you got to get to the airport are also the most efficient. So we just got to replicate the airport in a co-working space, sounds like.
It's interesting, though, that you talk about the fitness and mental health side of things, because I think that gets discarded far too often. And being someone who's a fitness fanatic and has been most of my life, obviously it's more forefront for me. Even building my first store in 2009, like literally building physically things in the store and doing the build out, I hated missing the gym because I was working so much. So I literally took some 2x4s and like a random pull-up bar and built a pull-up bar inside my space so I could at least do something while I was also working on the business, because it was important. I hated missing it. And I think that there was a transition point for me sometime in probably 2014, 2015. I guess I started CrossFit in 2013, came from the bodybuilding side, and it forced me to go to a class time, not just get there when I could. Back in the day, 2009 to 2013, I would literally, you know, work for Absolute Nutrition from 9 or 10 a.m. till 7 p.m. when the store closed, and then go to the gym. Sometimes a little bit of a commute. I'm there at like 8 to 10 p.m. at night. Then I've got to figure out dinner and then go to bed, you know, 12, 1 a.m., repeat, you know, rinse and repeat over and over. And when I started CrossFit, I had to go to a class time. that hamstrung me big time. I mean, it really fucked me up at first. And so it was one of those things where I'm like, I can't do this. You know, there's several days where I'm like, I can't break away right now. I cannot go to the 4 o'clock, but I'd force myself to do it anyways. Have to go to this 4 o'clock class. And then I realized how beautiful it was that it was cut and dry. It was actually less time that I was splitting away than the other gym, right? I was in at 4, I was out at 5. No holdbacks. I wasn't there for 2 hours messing around or whatever else. I was in at 4, out at 5. I could depend on it. So I could cut it off 3:30, go to the gym, be out at 5, and then go back to work if I needed to. And it was actually so refreshing, like Steven said, and clearing of your mind and kind of getting you feeling better, that I was more productive. And I think breaking that mentality of I can't break away because something is going to go wrong for this 1 hour, it's wild to me. Like, you have to be selfish with that hour. And you need to put it on your calendar. You need to break away. It doesn't have to be every day. Not everybody's a maniac like me and wants to train 5 or 6 days a week. You know, if it's 3 days, cool. But like, putting it on your calendar and saying like, this is my time, that's not being selfish. That's actually being a better steward of your mental health for the business, I think.
I feel like I'm a kid at camp sometimes. Like, my sisters joke with me that like, I have activities during the week that I like pay for. And it's like, you know, on this night I have tennis, and then on Tuesday mornings I have piano. And then she's like, you know, my sister's like, Steven, you're like my 8-year-old, 7-year-old son with all your activities for the week. But I'm like, no, like, that's how I create structure, because otherwise I won't stop. You know, Bruce, you do it with your like surf lessons and stuff. Like, you pay someone to hold you to it, whether, you know, whatever it is. We all need that one way or the other.
Yep. I mean, that's the same thing with Fabric. You're paying a coach. I don't want to go to my meeting without having completed my like whatever goals I set. So it definitely, like, I feel like I let the group down. But yeah, you could do it for free with your friends, like just meeting and texting and creating a group there. Matt McLennan, if people want to reach out and chat with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, definitely email matt@apparellab.inc, and that's .ink, like printer ink.
Let's go.
We love a good .ink domain name.
Yeah. Pronouncers, thank you guys for being able to join us this week. Matt McLennan, thank you for being so open and sharing so much about Apparel Labs. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.